The Real World Entrepreneurship Podcast with Bhairav Patel and Alan Clark.
Welcome to the Real World Entrepreneurship Podcast, where we tackle the practical challenges that startup founders and small business owners face and give our own unvarnished opinions. My name is Bhairav Patel. I'm the Managing Director at Atom Ventures and Atom CTO, where we partner with small businesses and startup founders to help them define and build their tech vision.
And I'm Alan Clark. I'm the founder of the Business Growth Partnership, and we work with high-potential businesses to help them unblock the blockages that are preventing them from reaching their full potential.
Welcome, everybody, to the Real World Entrepreneurship Podcast. I'm here today with Alan, as ever, and today we're talking about borrowing with pride. And this is something that you raised, Alan, and it's something that I didn't actually... Well, it's a phrase I hadn't heard of. And when I looked it up, there's lots and lots of articles about it. So explain to me what you mean by borrowing with pride, Alan.
Absolutely. Well, really what borrowing with pride is all about is lots and lots of people think I have to go out and invent something brand new and do something utterly unique before it's worthwhile, before it's meaningful. And borrowing with pride really comes down to the idea that actually, and you know, the big caveat here is providing you're not reaching intellectual property rights, but it's looking at things that are going on, things that work well, and saying, you know, rather than me trying to come up with a new solution, I can use something that already exists. And that might be a bit of technology that solves a problem. It might not be utterly perfect, but you can bring that in and accelerate what you're doing. Or it might be like one of the great ones recently with the whole software as a service idea. You know, it was an idea to begin with. But whoever mastered that first, lots of businesses said, that's absolutely excellent. Why don't we borrow with pride? We've not invented that idea. It's not protected. It's not like anybody's got a trademark or a copyright on it. So let's take that into our business and use that, and it can help accelerate. And the reality of this is, one that I think of, I many years ago, when in my time in advertising, did work with a company that was, it was called the Original Fresh Baby Food Company, because it was the Original Fresh Baby Food Company. They were the first business in the UK to actually sell fresh baby food. And then the first listing they had, unsurprisingly, was in Waitrose. So that was all about them understanding that new mums, when they move on to solids, would really like to give fresh food to their children, not frozen or tinned or any of that. And that's what they created their business out of. They recognised really early on that there was a really strong likelihood that they would be arrow cancers, because all they would do is go out and make all the mistakes, and whoever came in second or third or fourth would be able to look at their example and say, right, now we know how to do it, because we've learned from what they've done. We'll borrow their big idea with pride, because you can't copyright the idea of fresh baby food, well, because that's what people have been doing for millennia. And that's where they ultimately, when they pivoted massively into something else, that's another story altogether. But others came along and made a success. And that's just one little example of borrowing with pride. And when you're in a business, whether it's a startup, whether it's a small business, whether it's a very large business, so much of the time we're told that we need to be innovative and creative and do R&D. But actually, very often the best solutions come from lifting one's head up, looking around and going, that's good, we could use that within our business.
Yeah, it's interesting, because in the software development area that I work in, what I tend to do a lot is to look at how other companies are doing a simple process. So for example, KYC, know your customer, right? And anti-money laundering. And, you know, when you sign up for a bank account, you have to go through that process. If you get a credit card, you have to go through that process. There's many different, you know, you go through that process in many different theaters and many different kind of sectors. And so, you know, what I tend to do when we're looking at building something like that for a customer, I go out and say, okay, how are other people doing it? And then what are the best bits of what they're doing what are they doing well and what they're doing badly, and how can you find a way that brings together all of the best bits and removes all the bad bits. And I always do wonder whether it's not really necessarily, it is borrowing. It's not really copying and it's not really stealing. It's basically looking at it and thinking, okay, what are the pain points of a certain process that some other people have implemented? How could I improve on that to make things better for the customers that we want to attract, and actually then use that, the fact that we've made it more streamlined or easier or there's less steps or whatever it is, use that as a marketing proposition, right?
Just to repeat absolutely clearly, we are not talking about infringing trademarks or copyright or passing off here. It is more about the core thought or idea and how they are doing something better than your approach to it, that you might borrow, not steal, but borrow. But it also extends into other areas. Yesterday I was doing work with a mid-sized Scottish firm of accountants with a partner group in there. And we were talking about developing long-term strategy. And in that world, you know, as we recognise, the last 10 years have been absolute tumultuous amounts of change. As technology is starting to become more prevalent, but also the whole economic dynamic that's been going on. And then we looked forward and said, well, what's the next 10 years likely to be like? And they said, well, it isn't exactly going to just go back to a sedentary world. Probably when we don't know what the next global pandemic is going to be, and it probably won't be a global pandemic, but it might be a massive readjustment in the markets that nobody's found yet. But almost without certain, there will be a new technology world that we live in that we actually can't really even imagine right now, 10 years down the line. So that was all about change and all of that good stuff that goes on and why we have to look at strategy. But another thing that we got into, or they got into and then I interrupted them, was, right, we need to identify what our USP is here. Our unique selling proposition. And I let them go a little bit on this before I then interject and said, just remind me, what is the definition of unique? And they said, well, it's the one, the only one that is like that. And then, you know, when you extend that into, so there's, they're in a market with probably about 10 firms in it in Scotland that are similar to them. And then there's maybe another 10 that are bigger than them. And there's probably 1,000 that are smaller than them down to one-man bands. And I said, well, what's the likelihood of you finding anything that you can build a business around that is unique in that area? It's not about being unique. It's about having a proposition, an idea that is engaging for your target audience, that actually addresses what their requirements are, and that you can find market share in, and you can lever sustainably. So actually, rather than them sitting down and looking at how do we come up with something that nobody else has ever done, there's an element here, a large element here of, let's go and look at what successful people are doing in this space and borrow with pride. Because if we follow the thinking that is leading the market and align ourselves with that, then maybe we will be amongst the winners in this. So again, another little example of, don't sit and try and invent something brand new. Borrow with pride. Look at what successful people are doing and borrow it.
There's probably an inverse example of this, which is something like Google, right? So Google were the 10th or 12th search engine that came onto the market in the 90s when they launched. I think the biggest one then was either AltaVista or Yahoo, one of the two anyway. And they did the exact opposite of what everyone else had done, right? So if you remember, I don't know, people listening to this, it's probably a whole bunch would never even remember the very first search engines, but they were very cluttered and it was very hard to find anything. And then Google came up with this one box. Oh, okay, I can search. And you didn't have anything else. You didn't have news. You didn't have weather. You didn't have finance. You didn't have anything else but just search. And then their search results were more accurate. You could always find things. And as they obviously improved over time. And that's, I guess that's in the sense that they saw the market. They saw what the they saw kind of a difference. It's like an inverse than Borrowing with Pride.
I like that, and I'm very happy you raised that in this context, because the idea of Borrowing with Pride doesn't mean don't have unique thoughts. Mm. It doesn't mean don't be creative, don't be innovative, don't do your own R&D. But what it does mean is don't feel obliged that you absolutely must do that. Then the only answer is to do something that nobody has ever done before. Because the reality in the vast majority of markets is that they don't end up like the shares market, where one person dominates. The reality of most markets is they are very, very competitive. And really, the difference between the options is really in the detail. It's not in the heart and soul. So when it comes down to the motor cars, well, I know this is a slight exaggeration, but up until recently, most motor cars tended to have four wheels, one engine, a steering wheel, some doors for getting in and out, and an internal combustion unit up front. So if I was going to enter that market, I would borrow all of that learning with great pride. And then at the edges, I might say, well, I'm going to make it really fast or really economical or in a really nice color or with a bigger boot. So the heart of that is all about borrowing with pride. Because only, I'm going to get this horribly wrong, was it Mr. Benz who invented the modern motor car? Everybody in the world after that borrowed his idea of what the fundamentals of a motor car was about and then made minor changes to it.
Okay, so what do you say to entrepreneurs, and I think you must have had this as many times as I've had, right, that come to you and say, oh, well, I'm the Airbnb of this, or I'm the Facebook of that. This is my idea. It's the next Netflix, right?
I say, good luck. You're a really, really high-risk business. Because anybody that is the first to do anything like that original fresh baby food company on a much smaller scale has got a whole market to create. And you know, they may well do it. And this, my message today is, don't think big and have original ideas. But equally, don't feel obliged to have original ideas in everything you do. I remember chatting with a guy at a private equity house. I don't even remember how we got on the subject. But hell, I certainly remember what he said. He said, when I'm looking at a business plan, and it comes to the financial model, I take a reassuring breath when it said, this is based on the standard financial model of the following. It said, because those well-established models work. So everybody knows how it works, and that makes it really easy to invest in. It said, I get immediately nervous. So nervous that a cold shiver runs down my neck when you said there is a unique financial model here because nobody's ever done it and we don't actually have any evidence that this is ever going to work.
True. But then I guess in many ways, some of those are that those are the risk takers, right? And I could see that in some of the cutting edge biotech and some of the really leading edge research and development where people are putting in something that really doesn't exist in the market and I have no idea what the adoption rate would be or the hurdle to get, you know, customer acquisitions. It was interesting. There was a company that I was a judge on a panel and there was a company that is creating a virtual DNA profile of yourself. So this is very scary. So what they do is they take your fingernails, they process your fingernails, and from that they can understand your genetic makeup. And what they've done, they do then is they sequence it and give you a kind of a virtual biological footprint that then they can, the whole point of this company then is to sell you nutrients, minerals and supplements that will help your body hit main performance.
And you look firmer.
Well, yeah, I guess something like that. And so when we were looking, I mean, they had some financials. I think they were pre-revenue really. And you're like, how do you price this? Because what is it worth? I mean, they had a subscription model. There's certain kind of packages that you could price. And I was thinking, okay, but really, how do you price something like this? Because, you know, some people value this as massively. Other people think this is kind of crazy spooky, all in the while knowing that you're giving away so much of your information. A bit like we talked about in the last podcast about the metaverse. You're giving away so much of your information to another entity. This is why that the heredity, you know, those companies are Ancestry and 23andMe, you know, they're not, you know, they're not kind of genetic sequencing companies. They are companies that are selling your data for research, right? Yeah. Massive amounts of research, making 90% of their revenue comes from the research that the data is able to fuel. And again, it's like when those guys would have come out with their initial model, how would you price it? Because it's something that your 90% is hidden from the actual consumers. Right. And so
that's probably a good conversation for a whole other podcast about pricing, because I think a lot of the traditional approaches, as soon as you add in that factor of data, become completely obsolete. And I'm not sure I have any kind of coherent thought right now on that DNA sequencing thing.
Yeah.
Because arguably, one dimension of that, one proposition for that is, do you want to live forever? We'll help you.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of very wealthy people with a lot of money would gladly say, only allow that to this very small group and charge an absolute fortune for it, and I'll happily pay. But then the real value in that is not when there's a cohort of 10,000 customers. It's when you've got a cohort of 100 million customers.
Mm.
And all of that information. So I guess that one comes down to the value of information. And coming back to that, when it comes to raising money against a business and against an idea, you know, absolutely, there are a relatively small number of investors and investment opportunities that they invest in, where they put in enormous sums of money into the utterly unproven in the hope that they might actually create a whole new dynamic in the world. And this one isn't quite there, but I think you might have touched on this in the Metaverse podcast. I had very peripherally been doing some work that went to the on the Magic Leap platform, and they added $3 billion of investment put into it. How did you even spend $3 billion to only have one project in the end of it? Anyway, that is not the point. The point is they threw $3 billion into it and never ended up with what they set out to do. They ended up having to pivot enormously to find some way to make a worthwhile use for what they had developed, which was not the original idea. So my point in this, though, is that there are very, very few of us who are genuinely out in the world of R&D gaining investment to do stuff that has never, ever been done before and create whole new solutions. The vast, vast majority of businesses are finding ways to do existing things better. And the vast majority of those are not finding ways to do it 60% better, 70% better. They're finding ways to do it 10% better. So that's where the whole notion of borrowing with pride becomes really powerful. Identify what you do need to reinvent or invent, but don't go about reinventing stuff you don't need to reinvent. Follow that with pride, because you will spend an awful, or you could spend an awful lot of time working on things that you don't need to reinvent.
I think there's, going back to one of your other points, is that, you know, we obviously are saying don't steal intellectual property rights and don't outright copy. And I think what I find a lot is that, especially entrepreneurs very early stage, they do try to copy, right? They try to say, oh, I want this. Can you make it look like this company? And we're like, no, because that company has an operations. It has its own processes. It's got its own, you know, customer base, its own motivation, its own, you know, it's, if you go back to the business canvas, right, it's got its own propositions.
Yeah.
And you're not the same as that. Or if you're the same as that, then what is your differentiating factor, right? Is it just price? Then fine. But we always shy away from that, because we say to people, look, how are you actually going to run your business? You can't copy Facebook, right? Or you can't copy this, an Airbnb, because A, you know, what you're trying to copy is not how they started. If you look at how any of these companies started very differently, and where they've ended up, massively differently, right? And that's simply because they achieved huge amounts of funding once they got going. So you're trying to copy the end result doesn't make huge amounts of sense without understanding how they got to where they got to.
Certainly not if what you're trying to do is create an entire facsimile of what they've done. What's the blinking point in doing that? Because if they're all the engineer and they're doing it really well, nobody wants on me too. So there is one little area that always utterly astounds me on facsimiles. And I almost want to go just to reassure myself that it is actually true. And that would be going to China and looking at all the Chinese like-for-like copies of European cars. When they show you on the TV programs, you go, this is a BMW X5, and this is the Chinese motor company's version of it, and you go, it's identical.
Yeah.
It's identical down to the scratches on the bumper. Yeah. Anyway, that's just the side. But you're right, and when I told you about Boring with Pride, it can't be about everything. It can't be about just making a facsimile. But it is around areas like, what is a good way to raise money? What is a good way to structure our management team? What is a good revenue model? What is a good way to manage our investor relationships? What are good techniques for promoting our product into the market? You don't have to, you cannot go through all of that and say, we're going to do something unique. We're going to do something unique. Because it's practically impossible.
Yes. Definitely, because I mean...
That really was why when I said to you, we should do one about Boring with Pride, it was really to allow me to make my passionate case for don't reinvent the wheel if the wheel works just fine. Build those parts into your business and then innovate around it. If you truly are a groundbreaker and you are off to change the world and invent a whole new type of technology, hats off to you. It's enormously high risk. And realistically, maybe somebody listening to this podcast will be like that. I strongly suspect the other 9,999,999 people that currently listen to our podcast.
The rough number.
Won't be out to reinvent the world. So with that, I would say, Boring with Pride, look for things that work, that you can adopt, build them into your core business model, your business operation structure, and then look for those areas when you really can add value around it.
And I'd add to that, don't sell yourself short as well. So I think a lot of times when going back to the people trying to channel other ideas, look, you know, you can add your own magic flavor onto all of these things, right? And you may be able to do things way better than what's...
That is the point. You add a flavor onto... I don't want to say don't be innovative and don't be creative. But the reality is you're going to make a better tasting cake, not you're going to invent an alternative to ever eating cake again.
Mm. That's great. Right.
Well, thanks for joining us on this episode. What are we going to talk about next time? Oh, we'll think about that before we do it.
So it's goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.
Many thanks for taking the time to listen to the podcast today. If you like what you hear, please leave a review or subscribe. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, all the main podcasting sites. And if you'd like to learn more from us, you can contact Alan. He's alan@tbgp.co.uk. And you can find me at info@atomcto.com.